The Ryan Reese Show from Southern California. This is The Ryan Reese Show. Post your questions using @RyanReese on his Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Are you ready?
All right, it's going down Saturday night. I've been waiting for the show for a long time. Well, I actually had to wait for this man's life to develop in Christ so I could actually bring him on the show. So tonight, I have one of my good friends, Zach Yoshioka.
Correct.
There you go.
You got it.
Dang it. I forgot. I always mess up names if you listen to the show, as you have.
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
So let me give a little background before we get the show going. So I have a friend named Mikey from Islander, which he's been on the show several times. You guys all know him. And he says, hey, listen, my manager friend, I want you to meet. He's my manager and he's my friend. I want you to meet him one day. I think it'll be awesome when you guys meet. So basically, you're the guy.
That's me.
And yeah. You actually manage the Whosoever's now.
Mm-hmm.
You help manage myself as well. Mm-hmm. And since we've met and since God's been doing all these cool things, you're actually connected to a lot of the Whosoever ambassadors now.
Yeah, like Ronnie Feist and pretty much everyone that is in your guys' little circle, I was connected to at some point. So coming and being involved in the collected that you guys have has been really comforting. So
yeah, and you know, you've really just been a part of working with us over the last couple months. It's been a real amazing thing that God has been using you in our lives to actually connect dots and just help take the movement to the next level. Are you the owner of Powerman?
Powerline Management's our company. I'm the co-owner with my partner, Kyle Gorman. We were kind of most known for Kyle was instrumental in navigating Asking Alexandria's career early on. And then currently we have everyone from Escape the Fate to Butcher Babies, a lot of active rock bands, producers, et cetera. So.
And you guys have been producing music festivals and mm-hmm. concerts and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we have the concert company, which is on pause now, obviously, because of quarantine and pandemic landscape. But we've done almost 1,000 shows in the last 14 years. So it's been we've done shows for everyone from Travis Scott to 21 Pilots, John Bellion, seeing them grow on the way up, and then as a promoter that's not part of Live Nation, catching them on the way down as well. So
isn't that insane?
Yeah, I've seen bands in the van and trailer go all the way to 10 buses, all the way back to the van and trailer. So it's crazy, and we have applied a lot of what we learned in concert promoting and seeing what has happened with artists on the way up and down to the management side. We can see the mistakes, we can see the right records being written, the wrong records, etc., and just kind of apply it to the management side of things. So
dude, amazing. Well, look, at I love having different people on the show that come from different lifestyles, you know, managers, human trafficking people, musicians, pastors, all different missionaries from Africa. I just love to keep the show diverse. And the whole reason why I started this radio show is because I felt like there was a lack of bringing people from the culture into the church and exposing of how God can use you out there. Because a lot of people think that when you give your life to Christ, you have to work at a church. Like, if I'm going to serve God, it has to be at a church. I got to be a pastor. And everyone's like, how am I going to be a pastor or evangelist or, you know, some kind of a worship leader or something inside the church unit? But God has called us to go out of the church and to preach the gospel. Baptize the people in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey my commandments. We got to be living for Christ outside the church. How else are we going to reach the outside world? The church is important because it's where we come to get the knowledge of Christ so we can go live out in the world. And that's why I want to talk about your story today, because you are one that has found Christ and you are actually doing it, literally doing it, in such an amazing, unique space that a lot of people would love to be in, but God has chose you and placed you there. And he still has you there, which is amazing. But I want to talk about the story about how you even got to the place where you're at. Not that you've arrived by any means, but none of us have arrived. It's just what God's grace in our life is, how he uses us in these chapters and these seasons. But you know, just starting up, like, where'd you grow up?
I grew up, I'm originally, I'll just start from the core beginning.
Yeah.
I'm adopted from Seoul, Korea, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was in foster care, and I lived there for like the first 9 months of my life, before I was adopted from my adopted parents. Carl and Audrey Yoshioka. My dad's Japanese. My mom's white. So growing up, everyone thought, you know, in Iowa and Tempe, Arizona, the first few years of my life, everyone thought that I was like half Japanese.
Right.
So explaining to people that I was like half Japanese, but I'm from Korea and I'm actually Korean, was really confusing to people. So eventually I just started not saying anything about my adoption. People would be like, oh, you're half Japanese? I'm like, sure. You know, they'd be like, I'd just be like, oh, my mom's white, my dad's Japanese. And they would just assume.
Because you don't want to have to explain every time.
Oh, yeah. Just got so exhausting as a kid. Because, you know, as a kid, you want to fit in, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, why are you tall? You know, and just weird questions like that. Like, so yeah, when you're the, and also being the token Asian guy your whole life too. I mean, I
Did you say in Arizona and where else?
Iowa. I was adopted to Iowa first grade. My dad got transferred from Iowa State to Arizona State University.
Yep.
He's a professor there. My mom's a kindergarten teacher, and I'm pretty much an Arizona native at this point.
Nice.
So.
So growing up, like, how'd you even get into music? Were you into sports or?
Well, I was. You know, my whole family is just. All over my family is just, you know, all conference athletes, all state athletes, et cetera. And when I got to high school, my dad was pretty much just like, you're going to pick a sport or you have nothing to talk about with this family. So I was like, well, football, wrestling, and track don't cut, so I'll do those. And I actually excelled in football as an all-conference football player. You know, in middle school as that kid, you know, I was angry, you know, being a lot of fights, et cetera. The football coaches recognized that. And they were like, Zach will hit anyone. We'll put him in the field. And we know that he's going to, you know, want to kill quarterbacks. So that's what I did. And it was probably pretty, I don't want to say anything against football or anything against my high school's team or anything like that. But the influence that I had probably from my coaches was not, I would say, looking back on it now, all positive. It was something that, you know, they were taking the rage inside of me and then using that on their platform to win on defense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I literally, when I stepped on the field, I was just trying to hurt somebody, you know, and I felt like, you know, in contact sports, you have to have that mentality of like, yo, I want to hit people, you know, and
I feel
like in my teenage growing up years, developmental years, that kind of warped me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just kind of carried over in my attitude. Like, I was just kind of like that guy. It's like, if you look at me weird, you know, you're going to get hit,
right?
Pretty much, you know? So,
well, let's talk about the anger for a minute, because mm-hmm. that's very relevant with, the culture, a lot mm-hmm. of anger.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look, you just look around with the news and everything that's going on, a lot of anger and violence going on,
mm-hmm.
but how would you speak into that anger? How did that all come up when you were younger?
I don't know. You know, like, you know, my parents, my mom's pretty, you know, culturally Christian, you know, mm-hmm. we spent a year in Methodist, and my father comes from a military family. So very like, it's like this, you
right.
know, you're going to do it like this. There's no other way. And you know, I had great parents in the sense of like, they raised us with a lot of great morals. They taught us to work really, really hard. I baled hay on a farm every single summer up until the age of 16. But it was a very disciplined, like, you're going to get good grades. You're going to pass all your classes. This is what it is. And you know, not having really like a Christian background or any type of like understanding what love really was, I think my sister and I kind of rebelled against that a little bit too. Most of my cousins in the Midwest all went to church every Sunday. And,
right.
you know, when we moved to Arizona, we just didn't have that like foundation, with it. It was just like, be a good person. Do this, don't do that, and, you know, you'll be all right. But as, you know, the outside world has started to influence us, you know, football influenced me, you know, movies, MTV, all those stuff. I wanted to be a filmmaker for a long time,
okay.
and that's how I started touring. When I was in college, I started filmmaking. And this was before YouTube and like social media and stuff. So we were like premiering the movies over at this dollar theater, Tempe Cinemas. And
right.
we were passing out flyers and everyone was showing up. We'd sell out two screenings at 800 people each.
Dang, that's in high school?
Yeah.
That's
in
huge.
College. Yeah.
On
yeah.
college. Yeah.
So like Filmmaker Magazine was writing about us. The local newspaper was writing about us. It was, we were basically selling out these theaters with these films that we were making. And, you know, they weren't the best plots, but, you know, I could shoot and edit for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we would put music videos I was making for local bands before that. And this band called the Funk Junkies in Arizona recognized these music videos. And they were basically like, when I was in college, they were like, if we take you on these mini tours and you shoot a DVD for us, we're going to introduce you to this group called the Cottonmouth Kings on our label. And they'll take you on tour and they'll do all these things. And I was like 21, you know, I was just like, sure, you know, I was
this
naive.
Is how opportunities happen.
Yeah.
This is how it all happens.
So I was naive. I was like, okay, cool. You know? So we shot a DVD with them, and then more record labels started calling us. I remember I got a call one time, and this guy's like, hey, my name's Neil. My band's playing the Marquee. Can you film a live music video for us? And I'm like, cool. What's your band called? He's like, we're called 3 Days Grace, you know? And then we started shooting like Vans Warped Tour and all those things. But eventually, by the time I graduated, this guy, Kevin Zinger, calls me. He owns this company called SRH Productions. And he's like, Zach, what's up? I hear you do great video work. I got this group called the Cottonmouth Kings. We just broke off of Capitol Records, and we want content, and we want to put out these DVDs. Will you start touring with the band? And, you know, 22.
Did you know who they were?
I had gone to some of their concerts, yeah. But I didn't really smoke weed or anything.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You're pretty much sober. I mean, you're drinking, but not in the drugs.
Well, in high school, I didn't drink that much. It was like here and there, but I got to college, you know, I got my own apartment. Yeah. I was working as a film editor for some other place. And yeah, I mean, I was definitely living a sinful, yeah. sinful, self-absorbed life. Yeah. I was just like, wow, this is wild. No one's telling me what to do. I can do whatever. I'm making films. Meeting people all the time. I'm hanging out with bands. It was wild.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so this guy, Kevin Zinger, calls me. He's just like, basically my mom had to move my home graduation to the day I graduated ASU because I was getting flown out to this tour. It was like May. I came home in September, like a completely different person. The Cottonmouth Kings at the time, you know, they were blown out two nights in a row everywhere, like literally A, B, C, and D markets everywhere. Just crushing every single festival. They had gotten off Capitol Records, and they were just like this force. It was, you know, a real rise in like punk rock at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like the early 2000s, and we just rode that wave. And I mean, these guys were, I mean, I'll just say this, they don't call them the Cottonmouth Kings for nothing.
Yeah.
So
so being in that, so now you're on tour. You're basically living your dream. I mean, you're what, 20?
I was 22 years old.
22 yeah. years old, getting paid, traveling yep. around. I mean, you're doing big things.
Yeah, it was wild.
So, like, during this time, like, what's going on with you? Because, I mean, you grew up and you said you were kind of going to church. Did you ever have a relationship with God, or was that just more to kind of like a religious thing to you?
We did about a year at this Methodist church.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, it was one of those things, like, this is a weird story. Our tradition was to go to Dunkin' Donuts after church.
Yeah.
And this was when Dunkin' Donuts was like a diner. Okay. So we would always go to Dunkin' Donuts afterwards. And, you know, the church was just like old people and like hymns and like, you know, I was like fourth, fifth grade. I didn't know what was going on. I'm sitting yeah. in these hard pews. I'm like this.
Like
this,
full-on old school.
Yeah, I'm not into this, you know. The Methodists didn't believe in hell and all these things. So I was like, what's the point? Like, I don't really understand what's happening and all that. And so the family that owned this Dunkin' Donuts that we'd go to traditionally, they were a family that moved away from Iraq to get away from the war at the time in the Middle East, or whatever. And so they were running this Dunkin' Donuts as a franchise. And one night someone came in and shot the son, and it was like on the news, he died, all these terrible things. And I remember one Sunday after church, we went and we brought him flowers and stuff. And after that, my dad was like, this is like kind of too traumatic for the kids. We're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
So we just stopped going to church. And
got it.
Occasionally we'd show up at church on like Christmas at my grandma's church in like Illinois, but it just was never like, it was just like this thing. It was like a drive-through at McDonald's. Like if we go through this drive-through, like, we're good, you know,
right.
If we do this every now and then, you know, you should believe in God. And my mom would pray before meals and stuff of that nature. But like, I had no idea what it was. Jesus Christ to me was nothing more than a word, two words we said when we were upset.
It's like that. Exactly. It's like that American Christianity, you know, like I'm mm-hmm. born in America. Yeah, we go to church on Sundays, you know, but there's not that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are, you're on tour of Cottonmouth Kings. You're living your dream. I mean, you're 22 years old, own place, traveling all over the world. Like, what was going on inside of you during this time? Like, did you have any emptiness, or were you being satisfied, or like what was going on in your life?
Well, it was weird because you get into these moments. I always describe being around celebrity or being around high energy moments and stuff as very like, they're very temporary, but also like when you're around like a ton of celebrities in a place, I've always told people, like, people ask like, what's it like to be around like Travis Barker or be around like Motley Crue or whatever, yeah. you know, these celebrities I've been around. And I'm like, it's kind of like the mannequin challenge. It's like the real life mannequin challenge. The room kind of just freezes up when this person enters the room, and it's like, you know, how in the Bible they say, you know, ideology is bad and all mm-hmm. that. It's like a God walks in the room and everyone's looking at them like they're God, but they're not. So there's like this weird lingering presence that's like, this doesn't feel right. You know, why are we idolizing this person? This person's just a normal human being. And it's so bizarre because the room will freeze up like mm-hmm. Mannequin Challenge when someone that famous walks in. And I remember recognizing that early on, like, this is like weird. Like, you know, I'm like, this is what it is. Like when I was watching MTV and stuff growing up or listening to the radio, I was like, everyone looked at movie stars and musicians as like, man, what be so cool to be a celebrity. And then you're around them and you're like, this ain't that cool. This is bizarre.
That's so interesting that you said that. Cause it does have that atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
When someone walks in and everyone's kind of like, freezes, but then it's nothing.
It's weird. Yeah. It's just like, it's like this person is not God, but everyone looks at him with this ideology of like, so yeah, that's kind of, you know, what I felt, you know, a lot of early on. So I was like, oh, this is weird, you know? And then eventually, I realized that all the money was on the, you know, the business side of the music business. So, you know, my business partner, Kyle, we had worked on some Cottonmouth Kings stuff together with audio. And he was like, we're going to start this management company and we're going to throw shows and, we're gonna make a ton of money and we're going to go off and do this. And I was like, yeah, right. I remember he was like loading his sound gear into the Marquee Theater for this Cottonmouth Kings live audio taping. And the security guard comes up to him and he's like, yo, dude, like, can we get your ID? And so you can be backstage. And he's like, oh, I'm only 20. And I looked at him. I was like, I just hired a kid to do the audio on this Cottonmouth Kings DVD. I'm like 24.
Yeah.
I'm just like, whoa, like, I don't know. Like, are you know what you're doing, right? You know, and he had done like Authority Zero and other, you know, bands of that nature. But yeah, he just kind of jabbed me. And eventually I was managing this band called I Set to Kill. They were like a big MySpace band from Arizona. And that was like my first dip into like, you know, I think I could be in the music business because that's where all the money's at. You know?
Right, it's like not producing
the
events.
Yeah, it's not in the video side. It's not in the artistic side. It's in the management and the concerts and all that. You want to be where the cash is at. Mm-hmm. And so I was managing this band, I Set to Kill. And Kyle would call me all the time. We'd be on tour with like Papa Roach. He'd be like, we're going to do this. And I'd be like, dude, you're 20. Like, stop. And eventually convinced me, like, we opened offices and, you know, we didn't have any lines of credit or anything, but we were the first 4 or 5 years of it, we were just throwing these shows, making money, and that was paying for the whole party. But I was like substitute teaching on the side. He was working construction for his dad. And it was just like, dude, I was just getting burnt out. I was like, this is crazy. Like, why are we doing this? You know, how can you gross, you know, 200 grand and not have anything to show for it? You know, mm-hmm. and I'm still working the mm-hmm. day job. And then there was like this summer where I was so flooded with shows. I'm like, I'm going to, you know, run these shows all summer. I'm just not going to substitute teach this summer because I need to focus on this. And I blinked my eyes and it was September and I hadn't gone back to sub. School usually starts back by August and I blinked my eyes and it hadn't happened. So it wasn't like this decision, like I'm going to be in the music business now. It just happened. I didn't like say I'm quitting my day job. It just flowed like that. And then since that moment to 2020 when the pandemic hit, I've just been, you know, working with my bands, throwing anywhere from 80 to 150 events a year. We just rode a wild, wild, wild wave, you know?
Now, so. With all that though, there's been a lot of other stuff going on underneath because there was some emptiness that was going on inside of you. There was some soul searching. Mm. There was some crazy relationships that were going on because we've had some conversations and okay. So from the outside, yes, your career took off, but underneath there was all this crazy stuff going on in your life. That you were dating some girl that was in some
into witchcraft.
She was witchcraft, right? I know she was into witchcraft. Yeah. And there's all these crazy things were going on. So during this time, I got a call or text message from Mikey, and he says, "Hey man, my manager he's searching." And I was like, "Perfect." He's like, "Do you want to connect with him?" I'm like, "Yeah, dude, I'll fly out with him or." Have them come over here and let's just go break bread and eat lunch or whatever it is just to kind of hear what's going on with them. Because the thing that I don't like to do is, you know, come in and press Christ on people. Yeah. I want to be a my style is more like, let's have a conversation. Let's just get to know each other and hear what's going on. And during that time, you were actually, I think you were talking to Damien or something.
Yeah. So I have this client, Set to Stun. And, God kind of brought them into our lives in the weirdest way. I managed this other act called Escape the Fate, and they're like a pioneering screamo band. And they don't like taking any other bands on tour. They don't like other bands that much. They're just not, I mean, they're very personable people, but I wouldn't say they're like the type of band that is like best friends with everyone, like on a very shallow basis. They're either friends with you all the way or they're just not friends at all.
Yeah.
And they just kind of got behind, the singer of the band, Craig, just kind of got behind this band, Set the Stun, and the singer, Damien, is a Christian. And I remember we were in, we put them on multiple tours. They went with Escape the Fate, like all over the planet. And we were in the Hard Rock before this tour started. And it was like the first day of the tour. Show's like packed in Vegas because Escape the Fate's originally from Vegas. And
yeah.
Damien comes up to me in the middle of the show and he just goes, he's all excited to be on the tour and all that. And he's just like, Zach, God brought you into our lives. And
you're not a Christian, so what, so no, what do you think about that
conversation? I just, no one had vocalized that to me before, and I remember just looking at him like, what he just said was so, like, out of this world, utterly ridiculous. I was like, no one's ever said something like that to me, but it really impacted me. I was like, man, that is kind of beautiful, like, cool, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I think you're nuts, but cool.
Yeah.
And then I remember, like, later in that year, I had just picked up Islander, too. And, you know, Islander's one of those bands, God has just had his hands on them their whole career. Huge bands just want to take them on tour, like Papa Roach, Stone Sour, Korn, multiple times. I mean, they've just done every big tour, arena tour out there possible. And I remember sitting there with Mikey. We're in, we just had lunch with one of the biggest record labels on the planet. We were basically about to sign this deal, and we went out to dinner with the A&Rs. And so I'm sitting there with Mikey in this cab, I remember, in New York City, and we're just, I'm just vibing out. You know, he's just a really cool dude.
Yeah, Mikey's super cool.
Yeah, and I remember asking him, I'm like, Mikey, you don't really have a lot of star power. You're just kind of like some dude, like, from Greenville, South Carolina. Like, I'm like, why are you so different? Like, why do, when you walk in the room, why does the room light up like it's, you know, like Santa Claus just walked in? I don't get it. Like, it's like this childlike love about him. He just walks in the room lights up. And he just started talking about Jesus like it was, like a real person, like someone like in the room with us, like a relative or like an uncle or a high school college buddy or something. And I was just like, whoa, like I never heard of anyone talk about the character of Jesus like that. And that really stuck with me too. So fast forward, right before quarantine and pandemic, it's 2020, February 2020, and Damien from Set the Stun is like staying at my house.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. He's in town recording and stuff, and every night he's just reading the Bible at night. And I just kept looking over in the guest bedroom, like, what's he doing in there? He's just reading this Bible for hours. And it was crazy because he leaves, and I was like, all right, cool, man. We didn't really hang out that much that, when he was there because I was working and, you know, he was recording his album. And I get these text messages. I just missed two of them. Like, hey, Zach, we need to talk about some personal stuff, whatever. I'm just like, whatever. And I got another one. I missed him. I texted him back. We played phone tag a little bit. But eventually he got on the phone with me, and Damien was like, when I was driving home to LA, I just couldn't stop thinking about you. And I'm like, that's kind of weird. Like,
you know, it's funny.
I don't really know you that well, but
yeah, yeah.
Cool.
When you're not a Christian, it's so like bizarre.
Yeah.
You know?
So he's like, I couldn't stop thinking about you. And he just said some things to me. Like, he was like, Zach, like, you're a really loving person. You're always serving people. You put everyone before you all the time. And he's just like, I see your glass and you're pouring from an empty glass. He's like, you got nothing left to give. You're like so loving and you're always serving. You're doing everything that God asks you to do, but you don't know the Lord. And I, at that point in my life, you know, I'd lived with five girlfriends. I've had, you know, when you're traveling around the planet, just searching for like what is going to satisfy you, looking for peace. Yep. My mentality was like, if I can just get here, I'll be happy. If I just get here, I'll be happy. If I can just do this, this, and this, and check this off the list, I'll be happy. And it had gotten to the point where, you know, over $10 million had flowed through our business accounts. I own a house, my car's paid off, but I'd lived with five girlfriends. All ending in disaster with, you know, police being called and crazy things of that nature. And just all these traumatic things in my personal life, it just led up and led up and led up. And I was just burying it in work and just burying it in ideology and burying it in what I thought at the time was cool, you know?
Right.
So, at that point I would have done anything to feel better. So I was like, sure, Damien, I'll believe that Jesus saved the world. I'll give it a shot. And so I was like, the only person I can really talk about this with is Mikey Carvajal from Islander. And so it's March, the week of March 13th, right before quarantine hits. I call up Mikey and I'm like, Mikey.
So you would say safely that you're just completely empty. You've had everything that you've worked for.
Oh, yeah.
You have everything that you could say would make you happy.
Absolutely.
And yet, you're just empty.
I had it all. Yeah, I had offices. I had money. I have a house. Like, it's just like, you just have all these things that really don't mean anything at the end. So I just thought that those things would make me happy, and none of it brought any happiness. It was just, I was just miserable. I was angry and miserable all the time. And I was like, after Damien said those things to me, which were really affirmative, I was like, there's only one guy I can talk to about this, and that's Mikey Carvajal. So I flew to Indiana, and
he texted me and said, you're on your way over. Yeah, I'm like, it's going down.
I was just nuts. I mean, back then, if I wanted to go somewhere, I just hopped on a plane and went anywhere, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, Mikey, I'm coming out to you these dates. We're going to hang or whatever. And so him and his wife, Taylor, work at this school in Indiana that documentary Loud Crazy Love is, where Head from Corn and all them started. It takes care of his daughter, Janae, and other kids, troubled kids and stuff. So I fly out to the school in Indiana. I spend the weekend with him, and I just talked Jesus with Mikey till like 5 a.m. every night. And I just really was so intrigued about and curious about everything he was saying. And he hands me this book, Blue Light Jazz. He says, Lacey from Flyleaf says, read this book. He's like, it's going to change your life, and don't pick up the Bible until you read this book. And I was like, okay, I've read like 2 books in my entire life. Sure, I'll read this book.
Yeah.
And then then Taylor and him got me this study Bible too, and had like my name engraved in it. And I was like, I'm flipping through this thing. I'm like, this thing's like 2,000 pages. I was like, you want me to read this? Are you crazy? I was just like tripping out. I'm like, I did not understand the gravity of what all this was.
Yeah.
The next week we fly to Arizona, and then we go to LA because we have meetings with producers. And this is the week Quarantine hits. So we're in this meeting with John Feldman about, you know, making a record with him, with the label, all these big things for Islander. And then Mikey's like, I got to do this interview with this guy, Ryan Reese. And so we come to Calvary Chapel 1 year to go to get today. We were sitting in this room
today,
not today, but
close to 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah. So about 1 year ago, we were sitting in this room with you, and I'm sitting right over there, and
I'm
listening to Mikey talk to you about Jesus on this radio thing. And I'm like, curious. I'm like, you know, Paul Gomez is in here, who started Hurley. He's like talking about Jesus with you back and forth. And Paul was talking a lot about things with anger. And that was something that I've really identified with. And so I was paying real attention to what Paul was saying. I was paying real attention about him talking about being in the music business as well. Yep. I really felt like I could identify with him. And then afterwards,
really quick. It's funny because when Mikey said that, he's like, okay, Zach's going to be coming to LA. We got some meetings. And I was like, dude, this is actually perfect because Paul Gomez is coming in, and he has roots in the music industry. I know he knows, you know, Kevin Lyman and all those dudes. And I'm like, this, him just being in the studio, whatever, God's just orchestrating it and setting it all up.
So here it was like a chess pieces aligning.
So divine. Yeah.
So I remember being downstairs, and I remember I'm a pretty stubborn human being. Like and I'm very, very extreme. I'm not in unless I'm all in.
Totally.
Okay. And I remember being downstairs in the waiting room, and we were chatting before we went to lunch with Paul and Mikey. And I remember you saying, you're like, so you want to be a Christian, right? And I was like, yeah. And you're like, Zach. And you just started going over this like list of like ceremonial clean things. I don't know if it was that you just knew I was a stubborn person, but you just laid it out so clean to me on how I was going to do it. You were like, you're not going to drink, you're not going to smoke, you're not going to use profanity, you're not going to look at porn, it was just like this constitution. And I remember listening to you, and I remember looking over at Mikey, and I'd be like, what did I sign up for? I'm not going to have sex anymore. I'm like, what is this? I'm not going to use profanity. Are you crazy? And, but again, I was at a place where I was like, I'll give it a shot, you know? And so we go to lunch, and I remember the next day, there's all that coronavirus stuff on the radio and everywhere. It was everywhere. And we're sitting, me and you at Pho, and you're
eating some wontons that Mikey loved or something.
Yeah. And we're, everything's about to shut down. Like it's on like red alert. Like California's about to close.
Yep.
And Mikey's recording a song with one of my other clients, Kevin Thrasher. They was doing an REM cover. It's the end of the world as we know it, because it was about to be the end of the world.
Yep.
And I remember you were like, Zach, I know this seems crazy. I know you can barely read. You can do all these things. But you were like, here's the Bible app. You're going to read the gospel in this order. And you kind of just broke it down. You're like, here's these apps. You can do an audio book. Don't be intimidated. Just dive into this order and go for it. And
I'm
going
to hold
like,
you right there, because we're going to go to break in 30 seconds. Yes. And that Mikey song, I actually talk about it in the book.
Yeah.
Because it was right during that time I was writing it when you guys were about to drop that single.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just awesome, man. Look, we're gonna be coming back from the break in a couple minutes. I want you guys to go to whosoever's.com, get all the past shows. Damien, the dude we were talking about, he's on our past show. We got Mikey from Islander on the past show. You could get all the old radio shows, and you could book us for a tour. We will come to your city. We'll see you guys.
More of The Ryan Reese Show coming up. Post your questions at Ryan Reese on his Instagram, Twitter.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
And or Facebook.
All right, here we go. We are back. I got Zach, and you're going to have to say your last name.
Yoshioka.
Yoshioka in studio from Powerline Management. You manage all kinds of bands.
Yep, everyone from Escape the Fate to Islander to Butcher Babies, Otherwise, Stitched Apart. Yeah, we're all over the place.
Yes, and you came alongside. We hired you to come in and help us manage the movement and take us to new levels, and you've been amazing to work with, and actually, the whole team's very excited you're here.
Thank
you for being a part of the movement.
I appreciate it.
Now you're not only manage, you know, a bunch of mainstream bands. God has you, managing a Great Commission ministry, doing it.
Oh, I love it.
Look at dude. Right before the break, we're sitting there eating wontons with Mikey from Islander, Paul Gomez, which was on the radio show as well. He helped start Hurley. And you're like, dude, I want to give my life to God. I want to follow God. I'm kind of just laying it out. Like what I was doing is when you're talking about the layout session, I was like saying, hey, this is what's going to happen. Like if you go after Christ, like this is going to be the fruit of it. And you're probably like, what the heck? There's no way. But you were at that empty spot. Mm. And I know that empty place when you're just, you have it all. Everything you've ever wanted, you've achieved. Mm-hmm. But then you're just so empty that you're like, it's nothing to me.
Yeah, I literally would have done anything just to feel better. And at the time, I didn't understand what giving your life to Christ was. Like a lot of people, they say, you know, it's scary when you're first becoming a Christian because, you know, it's like, so I'm going to give my whole life to Jesus. Like I'm going to seek and follow him. I'm going to make him number one over my family, my friends, all those things, like my job. Like that is terrifying to say you're going to surrender and do that. But, you know, sitting there with you guys at lunch and you guys were explaining to me, you basically said, if you surrender, these things will happen to you. And I remember going home after that lunch, and it was super encouraging. Paul was like filling me up. You were filling me up with this Holy Spirit and all that and praying for me. And I go home. Quarantine hits. It's like our ticket sales with our concert company just paused.
Business.
My bands. Everyone was on tour for the rest of the year. 2020 was going to be one of the biggest years for touring for my bands. All the tours just got yanked. For the first time in my life, I didn't have the answer for my clients. I didn't, you know, I was used to having ticket money flowing into my bank account nonstop. I felt invincible for the last 14 years because I just always had access to money. It was just there. And when all those things got ripped from me, it was terrifying. I ended up getting on unemployment. I was getting stimulus, and it was just like I had all this like time on my hands, and I didn't know what to do. Everyone was scared of coronavirus. Everything was shut down in Arizona, so I remember just looking over. I picked up Blue Light Jazz. I ran through that, and that book is a lot about drift and a lot about like testing God. Like, is this real? Like, you know?
Okay.
That gave me the confidence to be like, all right, I'm going to believe that Jesus saved the world.
That's why Lacey told you to read that.
Yeah. I was like, okay. I'm going to believe that Jesus saved the world. I'm going to believe, I'm going to read the Bible. I'm going to apply everything in it to my life.
Right.
And I'm going to give it my all. Because like I said, I'm extreme. I'm either all in or I'm not in at all. And I had the time to really press into that during quarantine. And for 6 months, I just read the Bible cover to cover. I went from doing it only on the app, like you described. Mm-hmm. I just be on my BMX all night long, listening to it on the app. Then I did it with the book, and then I did it with the book and highlighters. So I ran through it multiple times. And throughout the process, you, Damien, Mikey, everyone's texting me, encouraging me, mm-hmm. and I'm probably just punishing you guys with questions.
But I want to hear about this. So what was that process like? What was God speaking to you? The first time through, what was going on?
Just little things like, don't lie. I didn't realize that becoming a Christian was not going to be about you. It was going to be about you serving everyone else. It was going to be about you putting yourself to death, to be born again and giving yourself, and serving. Being a Christian to me seems like if this was a DC movie, the star of the movie is Alfred, and Batman is not. You're Alfred if you're a Christian. You're not the star. So yeah, those are things that I kind of realized. And I kind of looked at the Bible almost like a Marvel universe. There's all these, if you got all these books written by apostles and prophets, and they're all put together in one universe, with all these different characters. I looked at it like a Marvel universe. So I started exploring, I started reading, I tried to really, really dive into it. And I don't really have any other influence on who Jesus was or whatever. So I took it at face value for what I was reading. Mm-hmm.
So what'd you think about Jesus as you read about him?
I mean, he seemed like, he just seemed like this guy that was super loving, but wasn't afraid to throw down if it came down to it. I read things like Matthew 10:38, where he's like, you're going to love me more than your own family or and kids and stuff. And I was just like,
you're like, dang.
I was like, I don't like that. That's crazy. What? I've read things like Abraham taking his son up to the saying he will obey anything God says, and I'll sacrifice my son. And, I read things like,
crazy.
Proverbs 31, where it's talking about, how a woman is supposed to be with a man and all the roles and those sort of things. And, 14 times in the first 50 Psalms, there's explicit sentences that says God hates sinners, not sin, sinners. And that freaked me out. I was like, this is tripping me out. Like, what is all this, and then, there's obviously a lot of wrath in there, and that freaked me out too. So I wasn't really sure, but the more and more I read it, and the more and more I started to dive in, the more I started to learn that, the primer of it all is this is the greatest love story ever, and that you can't have love without wrath and all these things. And that everything was leading to a climax with the Old Testament to, the gospel, which is the climax, Jesus, saving the world, dying for our sins, etc. That really helped me understand. And that really built a more, conglomerate in my mind of how to read it, like Damien said in the last interview, seeing Jesus on every page. And that just transformed me little by little by little. So I was in the Word, but I didn't have this, I remember calling Mikey one time, I'm like, yo, like, when's this breakdown moment happen for me? Everyone I know has this breakdown moment where they're in tears and all that. I'm like, I'm not there yet. I feel more at peace, but maybe that's because I'm in quarantine. I'm not buried in work. Like, when's this breakdown moment coming? I thought you mentioned it in your I Am Second video. Yeah. I thought Angel would show up in a dream or something. And, and I pretty much got to a place where I started to pray a lot, like 30 minutes straight. Mm-hmm. And I remember praying a lot and saying in my mind, I've seen some pretty awesome things in my life, God. Like, I've seen amazing things. So you better show me something more awesome than what I've seen. Or I don't know if I can do this. Like, show up, reveal yourself. Yeah. I need to see this. Like, I'm an extreme dude. Like, and if you do, I will do whatever you say, anything you say, I will drop it. I'll mow lawns if you need me to.
Like, Sonny calls those dangerous prayers.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty bold, but I was frustrated. I'm sitting here in quarantine, not drinking, not having sex, not smoking weed.
Yeah. You're like, dude,
let's go. I'm like, what am I doing? My flesh is burning up over here. Like, what am I doing? And I'm sitting here, and that's when I started praying like crazy. And then you, Damien, Mikey, everyone that was encouraging me over text, because all the Christians I knew were out of state, everyone stopped texting me back as fast. I felt like God was pulling you away from me or something. And I was just like, what am I doing? Like, now no one's encouraging me. Like, I need help. I'm in quarantine. I'm by myself. I don't know what I'm doing. I've read this thing front cover to cover. What do I do? And my fiance now, at the time, this is like August 2020, I had known her for about 15 years, just through mutual friends and stuff. Never had more than a conversation for longer than 10 seconds, probably over 15 years. And I just saw her posting all this Christian stuff on Instagram. And so I DM her, and I had to like really work up the courage because I didn't want to feel weird, you know, because, you know, there's all these like things with politics and stuff. You're a Christian, you hate these people. You're a Christian, you don't like this. If you're a Christian, you're evil, this, this, and this, and you want to judge everyone. And so I was kind of like DMing her like almost in a whisper voice of like, hey, like, I'm a Christian now, Jesse. I know I haven't talked to you in like a decade, really, and, you know, we're friends on Instagram or whatever, but, you know, like, I became a Christian in February. I'm looking for a church. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah.
And she was just, like, so stoked on that. She was like, come to church with me and my friends. And she helped get me plugged in. She got me into multiple Bible studies. She was, you know, just really, really encouraging and just bringing me around all these people that, like, actually cared about me versus what I was used to. So I went from basically being in the Word, not having prayer, being in prayer and not having community. And then I finally got some community. Yeah, it was like, that was kind of like the final step. So like in my journey, like last year, it was pretty much like, you know, I started reading the Bible and like 3 months into it, all my secular friends and everyone around me is just kind of like, oh, he's like found something, like good for him. He's found something.
Yeah, totally.
And then about even my family too, my dad was like, okay, you know, 6 months into it, everyone's like, it's getting weird. Like Zach's not going to bars anymore. Zach's not hanging out anymore. Like he's reading and praying for like hours at a time. Like this is getting weird. And then 9 months to a year into it, now everyone is kind of like Zach is completely psycho. So, but like, you know, more psycho in the, like, this is what I'm doing now. Like,
it's a real thing.
I'm going to seek and follow Jesus. Yeah. And this is what I'm going
to
do.
That's weird to the man that's not a Christian.
Correct. Yeah. And I've had to have this talk with a lot of non-believers and stuff that I've been very, very close with because I'm pretty, like I said, if I'm in, I'm all in. And I've had to have those talks in the most respectful way I can. It's like, this is what I'm doing. I don't know what you're going to do, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm the same old Zach, but this is what I do now. You know, I hope you can accept me. And it's been a great reaction with the non-believer friends and family and then believers and just being surrounded by people that actually like really value and care about you. Because when you're in the
music business, that's how you see who actually really cares.
Yeah. In the music business, everything's just so shallow. Everyone wants to take from you. I got to a place in my life where I was like, I don't want to meet anyone new, like at all. I don't want to meet these people. I don't trust these. They want to take from me. They want something from me. And, man, it's so wonderful. Like, my girlfriend just brought me into this community at the church, and weird ghostly things started happening after that. The lead pastor at our church was best friends with Donald Miller, who wrote Blue Light Jazz. Mm-hmm. The other lead pastor I played football with in high school. One of the other pastors there is from the hardcore music scene. And I just look at that, and I'm like, out of the 100,000 churches in North America, I ended up here. I felt like God placed me here. And then, you know,
he did.
My girlfriend and I, we just started dating.
Yeah, let's talk about that because we got about 14 minutes left. Sure. So, but that's enough time to hear this story. So obviously you guys were just going to church together.
Yeah.
So how'd this even start?
Well, I mean, before I was a Christian, I would just like hang out with girls. Like, no, not a date, not anything. I would just hang out with girls. And I remember, you know, you guys, I was probably punishing everyone around me, like with texts all day long. I missed talking about Jesus with someone, you know? And so we started texting, talking about God and that sort of thing. And, eventually like we hung out and, I just like, Jesse's really kind of like not my type. I'm like all in black and I'm around people with tattoos and stuff. Yeah. And she looks like, you know, she showered and she takes care of herself and goes to the gym and stuff.
Yeah.
And so she really wasn't the type of girl that I was usually hanging around, but we started hanging out and I just noticed like, you know, she was the same loving person with believers, non-believers, family, friends, strangers. She was just what Matt Chandler refers to as gospelicious. It was so like attractive. I was like, man, that is so hot. She just like lives the gospel. And she was like very patient with me. And, you know, I had a lot of fear coming into community and all that. And just showed me so much grace that I was just like, man, like, I remember this sounds crazy, but I remember sitting there the third time ever hanging out with her, and it was like a bolt of lightning hitting me. Like, yo, I felt this peace, and I just felt like, man, I think I'm sitting with my future wife. Dude, and I didn't really say anything right off the bat because I didn't want to like freak her out.
Totally.
But I also remember her. We had this conversation where she said, "If you want to pursue me for marriage and kids, then we can be dating," because it had to be intentional. And at that point, I was just like, sure, game on.
Like, dang. So how long in the dating or hanging out process did that happen with that conversation?
Maybe 2 or 3 weeks into it. Because, you know, real Christian girls, they're not playing, you know.
So God was showing her.
Yeah, too. The real Proverbs 31 girl is going to be up front, like, this is what I'm looking for. Don't waste my time. And I would, you know, like I said, I'm very extreme. I'm all in or I'm not in at all. I was like, sure, I'll pursue this.
So how'd you know that during the dating process, was there like guidelines and stuff you guys set up?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because you're a pirate and, you know, she's a loving Christian girl. And
yeah. You know, we talked about boundaries pretty early on. Yeah. That was really refreshing. And as someone that, you know, lived a super sinful life beforehand, you know, I'll be honest, I love being pure. I love not having to worry if your girlfriend is cheating on you or getting pregnant or should she have her period? I don't know, you know. I don't worry about those things anymore. Wonderful, but yeah, your flesh has to like die because you just, you know, every cell in your body's on fire, like saying, do this, do this, do this. And when you remove those things, that noise, the things that are not in the design of God, from you, everything just gets way more clear and more loving.
And that's what you did. As you know, we stayed in conversation and having these, you know, talking and texting back and forth. You literally, you went for it.
Oh, I just went.
You
all
went
in.
Full in, and you see that process happening. People that go, like, give their life to Christ and they really are serious and they just go, it's like that boot camp, you know, it's like the Navy SEALs. To become a Navy SEAL, you got to literally go into the gnarly boot camp to get trained.
Yeah.
And those ones that actually give their life to Christ and fully go for it, like, you know, the Damien interview earlier, your life, my life, when you just literally kill the noise and just go for it, that's when that transformation process happens quickly and God starts burning out all that stuff in your life that's destroying you, and you get into his purpose a lot more quicker. Mm. Like the plans that he has for you.
Oh yeah.
He just drops you into that plan quicker. But the longer process it takes, like, you know, it's like trying to go to school to be an attorney. You know, if you keep failing over and over and you don't really take it serious, it takes you 20 years to become an attorney.
Yeah.
Well, you wasted when you could do it in a certain amount of time.
Sure.
And that's what it is with our Christian life, is if you literally full send it and you go all in, you read the Bible and you actually deny self, you repent and you listen to what God says, he gets you that kickstart on your life way quicker. And that's what happened. I mean, dude, it's been a year and you're in my studio and you're engaged.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy.
Yeah. I'm engaged. You know, I thought that, you know, there's that line in the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the quarantine hit, I was taking unemployment. We didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
But then, you know, pressing into the Lord and making him number one and making my faith unwavering, God just provided. You know, my clients started crushing it on Twitch. Mm-hmm. It saved our management company. It saved a lot of our clients from, you know, going broke that were depending on touring full time as their main source of income. And then, you know, at one point I was like, I cannot like manage bands anymore. I can't be in this idolatry promoting and getting these bands things that'll never satisfy them. I can't do this. I should just be a pastor. I just went through that phase. Mm-hmm. I remember praying to God, like, I was like, just let me work for a church. Just let me work for a church, Lord. Like, I'll mow the lawn. I'll just do anything except be in the music business. And it was like the next day, like, you hit me up. You're like, hey, we don't have an operations director anymore. Would you like to manage this ministry? You're going to apply all your skills of what you have to this. And I remember when I went to the accounting people to kind of dial in my retainer, it was the email address was Calvary Chapel. And I was like, God just sent me, said, you asked to work for a church, here you go. And I was like, what? So that happened. And then, you know, just weird ghostly things, you know, like I remember, like I said, I'm adopted from Korea and I didn't tell a lot of people about it, but dating Jesse early on, I was like, babe, I got to tell you something. I know my last name's Yoshioka, which is Japanese, but I'm Korean. I'm not Japanese. And she was like blown away and mystified by that. I'm like, what's the big deal? What's so amazing about that? And apparently, you know, during quarantine as well, she got really into Korean culture, like food, you know, watching K-dramas and that sort of nature. She didn't really know why, but she just got really into the Korean culture. And, you know, just jokingly, she told a friend one time, like, hey, you know, introduce me to some Korean guys or whatever. And God sent the Korean guy right over there. So things like that.
He's in all the details.
Yeah, just really ghostly things like that. Even Damien, who led me to the Lord, and her, they have the same birthday. I mean, maybe those are coincidences, maybe they're not. But
we don't believe in coincidence.
All I can see is divine. Yeah, all I can see is God aligning everything a certain way. And all I know is this, is that if I've learned anything in the last year, it's just if you press in, if you trust him, and you understand that you don't need to know the future, that you don't have a crystal ball, but he does. If you just put that trust in him, he'll unravel amazing things before you. And even if they're, I've learned through other testimonies too, even if something tragic happens to you, it is part of a bigger plan, which is going to unravel and unfold and do something amazing down the line. You might be Ruth in the story of Jesus, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and then I've just, you know, also I've learned, you know, like John 14:14, you know, from you, Sonny, all these guys I've met, just that boldness and faith. Like if I've learned anything from you and Sonny and stuff, it's been, you know, I've never seen people trust in God the way you guys have. You guys will literally pray for anybody. You know, you guys will just step in and like fearlessly and just lead people to the Lord. And those are things that I wish, at least in American culture, we get stronger at and not just make it this, you know, you always call it the Christian huddle. Yeah. We need to get out of the medical tent and back into the field. If you know, obviously the gospel is the church trying to kill Jesus. So, you know, Jesus didn't spend his time with in a Christian huddle. And what I've learned from you is, yes, we should sword sharpen, but seeing you and Sonny go out into the world with where the brokenness and the pain and just being those pockets of the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of earth has been so inspiring.
And that's why we're here, is because we are pilgrims here. I've done so many interviews. I can't remember who said what, but we're pilgrims here on earth.
Yeah.
And our goal is God has given us the Holy Spirit so that his life may shine through us, that we can go be an influence on people and lead people to the Lord. Because it's all about the kingdom. It's all about eternity. Everything we do here, it's our influence on people to influence them to the kingdom of Christ. And that's why I love the fact that, you know, during this time of quarantine and you finding Christ and just, you know, going through this identity crisis of trying to figure out what's next in my life is that God has kept you and remained you in this place in management to let your light shine. And you'll never know the impact that you have on people. No, none of us will ever know the impact that we've had on people's lives until we get to heaven. But just being a Christian and doing our best to live that life that, you know, he's given us and to influence people in life and just loving people and praying for people and being available for people that goes so far. And even just with the bands and different people, I'm excited to actually get to, you know, meet your bands in that timing. I know I'm coming to your wedding, when that's happening and just to let people know that, you know, God loves them and he's not that stereotype of what people think he is. He's not judgmental. It says that God so loved the world that he gave his son to die on the cross, that whosoever that would believe by faith would live forever. Their name would be written in the book of life. It says that God did not come into the world to judge the world, but to save the world through his son. And God loves us. And he's just, you're the perfect story of what God can do with anyone.
Yeah. If I've learned anything about Christianity, is that Christianity is being Christ like. It's not just, you know, being in community and doing things in the church and being involved in activities and stuff. All those things are great, but again, like I said about my fiance Jessie, like she is gospel all the time with whoever she's around. And I think that, you know, the more we can go into the world, the fact that God left me in music, added more clients to my roster, given me this biblical scope to like view things completely differently in a more mutually beneficial way. Like I'm literally in a business Bible study now where they take
amazing
parts of the Bible and they apply it on how you can navigate people with hard hearts in business. And things like that have just really like, I feel like I have x-ray vision now. Before when I was just looking at things of like, all right, it's eye for an eye. This is the music business. We're ruthless. And now it's become, how are we going to love on people? You know, and if you love on people and you stay faithful to God, I've just found nothing but blessings coming my way. And like I said, even if he doesn't bless me, that in and of itself is rejoicing your suffering, because whatever is to become of that suffering is going to have an impact further along. Like we're literally a pawn in the chess game is what I've realized. And that, you know, we're all going to bow eventually. You know, Damien said it in one of his sermons. He's like, he's God. Who do you think we are? You know, all the kings, everyone, we're going to bow. So if that's the truth, you know, we need to just love each other and be in the design of God and do our roles in the design of God.
I like what you said, how everything that we've been through, God uses that, whether mm-hmm. it's like, cause people think like, oh, if I give my life to Christ and he's going to bless me, everything's going to be a right. blessing and life's going to be unicorns and rainbows. No, it's not like that. Yes. He blesses you. And even when you're in those storms or in those hard places, like he's there with you and he gives you that joy. But sometimes he has to take us through these storms and these like God used the coronavirus to lead you to the Lord. Not that he set it for you, yeah. you know.
I'm definitely going to be one of those Christians.
But he used this. Yeah. He used this, dude, major storm. Your bank account stops, bands, everything, this whole operation mm-hmm. that your job is to provide resources mm-hmm. for your bands and keep the income flowing back and forth. But God used this crazy situation and he took you on this journey. And then mm-hmm. even like he almost had all the Christians kind of withdraw, that opened another door for you to reach out. Yeah. Right. I was thinking about that withdrawal of mm-hmm. us, those text messages, that he used that for you to actually reach out to find her. Mm-hmm. And then he used that situation to where you're at now.
Yeah. Engaged. It's been such a wild thing. Cause like, you just see how God works and you see how he'll just align perfect moments the way he does. And it's really, really beautiful. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just so grateful. Like all praise to him. I mean, it's been, quite a journey. My life went from 100 miles an hour to way, way, way slower and way. I'm like a million times more happier. I actually know what peace is. My heart used to feel like it was pounding through my chest every single night. And I didn't know how to stop that. So if anyone's listening, I mean, just give it a shot. If you can just get to a place of willingness, to apply the Bible to your life and pray and believe Jesus saved the world and just live in that and just press into that, your life will supernaturally transform, like 100%.
Well, I'll end it there. Well said, Zach. Dude, thank you for being on the show. And dude, I'm so stoked I met you. And thank you for just being a part of the movement and just allowing God just to come in and reign in your life and transform you. That just, it really encourages me. I just get excited when I see the power of God come upon people and just transform them.
Thanks,
and now, man. I mean, you're going to get married.
Yeah.
Blessings there. And just what God's going to do just with that. Once you guys get married, what God's going to do there, that's going to be this whole another amazing chapter in this journey. And God loves creating journeys in our life to keep it interesting. So yeah. Thank you for being on. We love you guys. Go to whosoever's.com, download, go to Kill the Noise book, get the book. Send it out to people that need to get encouraged and build their faith. I love you guys, and next weekend we'll be talking. Peace.
Sweet.
This has been the Ryan Reese Show. To connect and find out more about Ryan, click on ryan-reese.com. Check us out next Saturday at 9 p.m. for the Ryan Reese Show.
Hey everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kynos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in an everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.